everyone. Welcome back to the Man and Machine Podcast, brought to you by Our Communities International. I'm your host, Dr. Ian Beck, and you have found us on episode 81. And we are quite fortunate again to have just an all-star as a guest here in the space of AI and medicine. Dr. Piyush Mathur is going to join us and talk to us about his interests in AI and medicine and a really fascinating community that he has created. So a brief introduction is that Dr. Mathur is an anesthesiologist and intensivist at the Cleveland Clinic here in Ohio. For those that have listened, you know that I'm in Columbus, Ohio. He has over 20 years of clinical experience, and I think that really is an advantage to those of us who are trying to learn about how AI can be really applicable to clinical medicine. But he's also served as a quality improvement officer, always acting as an educator, which I've witnessed remotely at least. And importantly, a topic for discussion today will be that he's the co-founder of BrainX and BrainX Community, which is really just a fascinating collaboration of many physicians and other clinicians and scientists who want to educate ourselves and our communities about how important AI in medicine is and will be. So Dr. Mathur, welcome to the Man and Machine Podcast.
Thank you, Ian, and thank you for the wonderful opportunity to be part of this great podcast series and learning from each other.
Yeah, and that's definitely been a development in the course of the podcast, is that we've tried to bring people on who like to talk about science and technology and definitely AI and medicine. I'm curious, because you and I were introduced through the Innovator MD group, and you actually did a great job of introducing me when I gave a presentation at that conference back in January, which is why I wanted to make sure I did you an equal service here. But tell us a little bit about yourself as a physician and as a clinician and why you think AI in medicine is so important.
Yeah, no, it's been an interesting journey, and it's been a journey that's related to trying to solve my own problems in many ways. Started off with med school in India and then came here to Cleveland Clinic, where I did my further training in anesthesia, critical care, and quality. And once I was finishing up my quality training and serving as the quality officer, one of the things I realized was that I couldn't deal with the data just on the Excel sheets and trying to pivot those rows and columns. They were continuously increasing. A lot of hospitals have become health systems through mergers and acquisitions, and the number of rows and columns, the number of metrics that are required to be measured have grown a lot. So I was trying to solve my own problem, trying to work beyond Excel sheets. How do I capture and analyze this data in a more meaningful way? And at that time, my chairman, Dr. David Brown, gave us a three-page article on complex adaptive systems. And initially, I read through it and I didn't understand it well. All I could tell was it was about engineering and it was about some methods related to that. So I kept it aside. But then I did come back to it, thinking that healthcare systems are complex adaptive systems. So how can I learn more about this? And through that journey, stumbled upon artificial intelligence and machine learning as a possible solution. But having extremely little in my background for computer sciences, other than my high school training, I didn't know where to start. So started by learning programming and then various aspects of AI, including machine learning, deep learning. And you can look on my LinkedIn profile, all the courses that I subsequently took to train myself, educate myself, and doing a lot of projects, working with a lot of different experts across the world helped me gain more knowledge about this space.
Yeah, and I think your journey for the listening audience is a great example of continuing to be a learner, looking towards tools that can help you perform better as a person or as a clinician, as a physician. And certainly that's one of the reasons why I was excited when you accepted the offer to come on the Man and Machine podcast is you have a journey that many people can learn from, not just as a physician, but in terms of a learner. And I will make sure that we link your LinkedIn page, which I did on Twitter, that I linked the BrainX community that we're going to talk about, because there's a lot of nuggets there for people to take home and recognize that it doesn't just all of a sudden materialize. Now, how do you think, and one of the things we're going to talk about that I was super excited was this 2021 year in review that you moderated. But I'm curious how you have seen as a intensivist the use of artificial intelligence kind of come into play in your clinical practice, maybe even before the COVID pandemic, but most certainly during the COVID pandemic as well.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for critical care, at least right now, the applications of AI that are there in clinical space are very limited. They're coming through. So there are certain hypotension prediction algorithms that are coming through with various devices, echocardiography that we use all the time in the intensive care units, is seeing application of AI to automate a lot of data analysis and image processing. So it's not there in application in full spirit yet in critical care. But I do see it being applied in a lot of different places. And that's the opportunity for us as critical care practitioners, or for that matter, any specialty practitioners to learn from each other. And that was the reason to start doing the reviews that we do and published on an annual basis on BrainX community. The reason to start that was taking a step back, the need to form BrainX community. So I'm just going to take a couple of moments to go through that journey because it'll explain it better.
So that's great. Thank you.
As I started training myself, I was joined by Dr. Pepe, who's the co-founder for BrainX, and we formed this wonderful team, which was subsequently joined by Dr. Ashish Khanna, Dr. Kamal Maheshwari, and Dr. Yasik Sivinsky, with a common goal and common purpose, trying to identify how we can apply AI in healthcare. And we all believed in it. That was the central idea, that we all believed that there is an opportunity to apply AI in healthcare to make healthcare better. But as we did that, we started working on things, there were a lot of other people who were asking questions similar to what we had asked. At the same time, we were learning from many people. So that was the reason why we decided to create a platform called BrainX Community with the website of brainxai.org, where we decided to host a lot of content and material. Initially, it just started with a collection of a few articles. We started having live meetings on a monthly basis, which are held on Zoom, via Zoom now. So they're virtual now. It has grown to have its repository of the largest repository of open source data sets, because that's a common need for data scientists and for clinicians. It has a lot of different mediums of content that are available through it. But we have a very active LinkedIn channel where there are a lot of clinicians and data scientists who share scientific work. And that's what we are focused on, sharing of scientific knowledge so that we can all learn together. And by sharing, we grow at a faster pace and at a better pace. And that is what led to doing an annual review and publishing the annual review so that we could summarize what happened in the past year. And in that review, we talk about the trends, the topics, we classify the publications from the prior year based on healthcare specialties. And now we have a lot of expert specialists who have knowledge of AI in healthcare write brief editorials about their specialty and what happened in that space, including picking some of the best articles so that the readers can, at a glance, get an idea of what happened in a particular healthcare specialty with respect to research and publications of AI, and then subsequently decide how they want to grow further. But that publication had an origin and a basis on growing this platform where people can connect together and learn from each other.
Yeah, and there's a couple of really good points you made there. One, about LinkedIn as a platform for us to share information and collaborate with individuals outside of our own institutions. You know, there's a, I think the greatest resource to the internet is decentralizing information. And then secondarily is creating these connections where individuals like you and myself who, well, we're not geographically that far from each other, maybe didn't know that each other existed until we both got into a similar group. And then we realized, hey, we actually have very similar interests. And here's this other platform where we can share ideas. And that's where I learned about the BrainX community. And I certainly, you know, appreciated the fact that someone had gone ahead and put all of this really amazing work, right? So if you publish a paper, you are putting your own thoughts, many other people's thoughts together into print. You're collaborating with other individuals, and then you just multiply that, and logarithmically, you end up with millions of years of people's of experience going into a work like you've put together with your colleagues, which shows, you know, I did not read the article. I'm going to be honest. I went through it, but I watched the presentation on the YouTube channel, the BrainX YouTube channel, and you're 100% correct. So many people contributed, so many people put in time and effort, and that's what a community is about. So I give you and your colleagues a lot of kudos for having the vision to get started. And then to see where it is in 2022 is just really brilliant. So thank you for that.
No, thank you for your kind words. And I can tell you that we published it the last iteration, the 2021 year in review, towards the end of February, and it already has close to 4,000 reads. So there is a need for people to get curated information regarding AI and healthcare application. And that's what we are trying to serve.
Yeah, and for the listening audience, again, I'll link to that video, but also the article. The video does a great job, and I certainly read a lot of articles. Watching the video allowed me to kind of conceptualize and actually hear and see all these people who contributed. It's not just a name and a picture and a paper, which is useful, but it just goes to show you how important this community is, that people are willing to take time and effort out of their day, not just to contribute on paper, but then to come to this presentation that you recorded. And another really important thing, at least to me, is to see how important artificial intelligence is going to be to the practice of medicine, because you had people from all different specialties. I'm a family medicine physician. You're an anesthesiologist, critical care physician, but you had gastroenterologists, you had ophthalmologists, you had geneticists, name it, and they were represented. Why do you think, as someone who's leading in this community, that there has been this groundswell in the last few years of so many clinicians wanting to get educated, but then also involved in the utilization of AI technology in the research or practice of medicine? What do you think is underpinning that?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Probably I can relate to myself and think about why did I get into this space. Probably the answer lies in that there is a need for improvement. And a lot of us as clinicians are very driven in trying to improve the delivery of care to our patients. And a lot of us are very strongly into innovating, into researching solutions that will help our patients. At the core of it, we all want better care delivery for our patients. And yes, I think it's that central drive, that quest to look for solutions that deliver better care to our patients, that's driving various clinicians to look for solutions. And AI, especially these days in a data-rich environment, is an obvious choice. with the advent of EHRs and EHRs becoming universal, the data getting digitized, it's obvious that we would go towards machine learning or other AI techniques to interpret the data, utilize the data, build tools that provide us with actionable information in real time, at right time, which can be applied to the right patient. So at the core of it, I do believe it's a genuine quest to improve delivery of care to our patients that's driving a lot of clinicians who are seeking to research and to innovate with AI.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. For those that haven't listened to the podcast before, you know, I am a family medicine physician. I had an interest in science and technology from way back. And as I started being educated as a physician and certainly practicing as a resident and then as an attending, I did always want the best possible outcome for every person who came under my care. And I recognized that it, you know, utilizing the information that I received in training was excellent. But if there was some way that I could be better, I would want to learn about it. And that has driven my passion in educating myself in machine learning and AI, not quite to the extent that you've done, but you've set out a pathway. Like I said, on LinkedIn, you demonstrate several courses that you've taken. I'm going to definitely plug into those. I'd recommend others do the same so that we understand we have learned from each other, but there's another way of enhancing that, this community of understanding that science and technology and AI can help us deliver even better outcomes. So I'm a little bit, maybe a step behind you, but that's why I'm talking to you on the podcast, introducing you to the listening audience, hopefully some of whom already know you and they're just listening to get even more knowledge from you. A question that came to my mind listening to what's driving you is, have you seen in your clinical practice, let's say in the last 5 years, a way, maybe a specific example or a general example of how AI has actually improved your ability to deliver care or improve outcomes? And you don't have to mention any proprietary technology, but I'm just curious if there's anything that you've seen, you're like, we are heading in the right direction.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of enthusiasm about AI application in healthcare, but at the outset, just from our from what you had mentioned, I just want to caution the listeners that when you look through my LinkedIn profile and some of those courses, they were done at one point of time, and AI is an evolving science in itself. So some of the courses that I've done 3-4 years ago, I may not do those myself now because the science has evolved, and I would recommend definitely look at those, but also look at what is the latest and the greatest. Some of the tools and the techniques that I used for my research work or publication 2 years ago, I'm not using because the science has evolved. AI is a very rapidly changing science by itself.
Great point. Yep.
But jumping forward to your question, what gives me a lot of enthusiasm is not necessarily just in the space of anesthesia or critical care, the space that I live in, but looking at how AI is being applied across healthcare. So we think about endoscopes, where there are randomized control studies, multi-center randomized control studies, looking at these applications, which are now live, guiding gastroenterologists in defining what they should biopsy versus what they should not biopsy. And it's not about trying to be a smarter doctor, but it's about empowering the clinician with data to make that decision. Providing another support tool in that decision-making. Similarly, we see on the echocardiography side, it's about democratizing a skill set. So you and I understand very well, and I'm sure some of your listeners understand this very well, that performing an echocardiography, an interpretation of those images, is an exceptional skill. It requires a lot of training and it requires a lot of experience. Now, how can we democratize it? How can we provide it to other clinicians so that they can use the same tool to benefit our patient. That's a great opportunity that is available to us. There was a recent paper that talked about the echocardiography techs doing echocardiograms versus nurses doing. And in that particular paper, the nurses did echocardiography supported by the AI tool. And what they found was that the nurses were able to get the same interpretation as those echocardiography techs. Now imagine that. You have suddenly had the ability to democratize this key skills so that a lot of nurses at bedside can use this tool and can help provide the information, which otherwise would require very special training and extensive experience. And today, we are realizing the importance of democratizing these skill sets as we get into this situation where there is a huge shortage of experienced clinicians at all levels, whether it's nursing, physicians, or other specialists. And if AI can democratize it for us, that's empowering us.
Yeah, I agree. I think as physicians and as scientists and as innovators and people just with an innate curiosity, we want to be able to help as many people as possible. The training it takes to get to a level like yourself or myself is years. And there's an opportunity for us to leverage technology on behalf of that patient, right? Not necessarily on behalf of ourselves as clinicians, although that's fantastic as well, but to allow individuals who need healthcare to get better outcomes. I'm curious for the listening audience, if you could dive a little bit more into what you were just stating there. So an echocardiogram is an ultrasound picture of the heart. And these technicians who perform the echocardiograms have received enough training that they can do it to assist the cardiologist to have the images to view. And now you're saying that the bedside nurses may actually be able to do as good of a job. So is it the AI that's allowing that to happen? Can you dive a little bit more into that?
Yes, it's the AI that is allowing that to happen and create a level playing field. When I think about my journey in use of ultrasound in critical care, I had to take a lot of coursework and then learn about its application over time period. Now, if you have some level of that being provided by an AI tool where it can help capture the right image, where it can help analyze it, where it can do certain calculations that are needed when we perform this ultrasound or echocardiography, it saves time. It democratizes it where there are a lot of other clinicians who can use the tool. And then it elevates our purpose. Our purpose is not just to perform one particular test. Our purpose is to deliver better care to the patients. So we will see our own evolution through these tools, where instead of performing echocardiography, we'll probably focus on interpretation and a higher level of decision making in the future. And that is going to be the future that I hope will elevate the level of care for our patients and make us better clinicians.
Yeah, I appreciate you diving into that with my curiosity, because that's, I think, something that might, and I'd like to get your opinion on this too, that might frighten some physicians and other clinicians, that somehow technology and artificial intelligence is going to replace us, when really it's going to enhance us and allow us to serve an even greater purpose. Is that how you see this playing out with our continued push towards improving the technology and making it more democratized to all sorts of clinicians?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I don't think it's about replacing us, but it's about evolving us. So when we think about radiologists who have adopted AI very well into that space, they are the ones who are leading a lot of research work and innovation and application of AI in healthcare. They themselves have evolved from just reading chest x-rays to performing all these procedures which required a surgical operating room and a highly skilled surgeon. They are able to do it with the smallest of the incisions, and they are able to do it where it benefits the patient so much that they can go home the same day, which otherwise would have required 3 or 5 days stay in the hospital. So radiologists have evolved in the use of technology from just reading x-rays all the way to where they're highly skilled clinicians in healthcare. And they are working on getting to the next level. So it's not about replacing the clinicians. It's about empowering them. It's about helping them evolve to the next level where they can analyze the data that is being produced in this great or large amount of magnitude. And we all have only limited capabilities to process this data in a meaningful way. So if we can get assistance from AI to convert this data into meaningful information, I think we will evolve as clinicians in a better way. Similarly, if you think about when I started my residency in anesthesiology, putting in central venous catheters, these are these IVs that we put in large vessels or large veins. It was done using landmark technique. We didn't have ultrasound at bedside. But then ultrasound was made available at bedside, and now we put these central venous catheters or these large IVs under vision. And it makes our job much easier because we are able to visualize better. The risk of harm is less. The patients are better, more satisfied because we are not puncturing their skins as many times as we were previously. And the outcomes are better. So here is a clear example where we are using technology to be better clinicians. Now, what if in the same case, the ultrasound, when you put on the patient, also gives you a trajectory map, which way your needle should go, and identify the structures for you so that you're not guessing? It would make us even better. And those are the applications that are coming into real life. There are some applications related to that that are coming in real life now. And these will help us evolve. And I would not be worried or afraid about clinicians getting replaced, because clinicians are very smart, just like humans, any other human. They're very smart, and they will learn how to use these tools and evolve to be better clinicians.
Yeah, I like your mindset and the way you walked through a really great clinical example. Now, I've mentioned here a couple of times, I'm a family medicine physician, but I was fortunate to train in a program where we had a significant amount of inpatient training, and I have placed those CVCs, those central venous catheters, with an ultrasound, right? And that ultrasound made me, I can speak to my personal experience, a better physician. Less attempts to place that successfully, more expeditiously, because if you need to use that, it's usually because the patient is quite ill, and you know this even more than I do as an intensivist, as a critical care physician. I feel fortunate that I was able to use that technology to better the outcome for that patient. And the example you gave there is, this is the motivation behind individuals like yourself and myself wanting to use this technology, is so that we can help people. And I'll use another quick example, is that my oldest friend in the whole world is an interventional radiologist. And he's definitely in this space as well, like you said, where radiologists have adapted, said, how can I do my job better? How can I do more of a profession? Because we are a limited group of individuals. And we're, I think right now in 2022, you know, still in the middle of a global pandemic, though things have changed in the last year, thankfully, where our skill sets are more needed than ever. And I think you could probably attest to that even more strongly as I could because of your critical care. Where are some other areas that you see based on your experience, right? You're practicing as a clinician. You've got this interest, but you're also part of this community that's leading the way in making this comprehensive site with the BrainX community to educate individuals. So have you started connecting any of these dots with all the discussions you've had with people? What do you think are some other areas that could really be transformed or improved with the use of AI in medicine?
Yeah, that's a great question, because as we do the reviews and as we see all the research and publication that is coming through, we see very wide applications of AI in healthcare. I'll give you one personal example where we did research on applying AI to analyze patient experience comments. So this is more on the administrative front, more on the quality front, so not a direct clinical application. But we wanted to see if we can apply AI, and especially the natural language processing part of that, to process all the patient comments that patients leave us with after their episode of care, just like you would when you go to a restaurant, you fill your feedback survey. So we do collect these, but how good are we at analyzing these? And that's been a challenge for us, because you can imagine, as I said previously, hospitals have become healthcare systems, and now all of a sudden you're caring for a million lives or more. And the episodes of care have increased tremendously. And you are gathering all this data from patients. And these represent patients' voices. So how can you analyze them? So we did a pilot project previously where we manually analyzed these patient comments. It took us 4 months to categorize them. We learned a lot through that. But then I was wondering, is there an easier way to do this? And that's when I looked at sentiment analysis, which is a natural language processing tool or an AI tool, and then looked at certain other AI tools which can help classify the sentiments into different categories. Now, all of a sudden, building these algorithms and connecting them together, we were able to analyze 15,000 or more comments in less than a minute and get that classification done. And we published that recently in the Intelligence-Based Medicine Journal, our experience with it. So when I see the application of AI, it's not just on the clinical side, but it also is there on the administrative aspects of healthcare. And there is a tremendous opportunity to bring down the cost by applying AI on the administrative side. So there are a lot of research, there's a lot of research work, and there are a lot of publications which focus on how to decrease readmissions, how to provide information to clinicians so that they can follow high-risk patients. I see applications being built on the financial front so that there can be better analysis of the data that can be provided to healthcare systems so that they can have a better targeted approach. So it's not just on the clinical side, it's not just at the bedside, but we are seeing applications of AI that are being built and applied across the horizon, across the entire spectrum of healthcare. And that is really heartening to see.
I think I'm enjoying listening to what you have to say. So I know that the listening audience, who's not here in person getting to interact with you, must be having the same experience, because you're pointing out some really critical things for us to remember, is that healthcare has many different layers. It's not just about you and I providing clinical care to that person in front of us, which is of utmost importance to us as clinicians, but also how do we amplify the patient's voice without it overwhelming the practice of medicine. And I think that's a great example you gave with utilizing algorithms on patient feedback. And you know, we all like getting positive feedback from our patients. I ask my patients, you know, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And sometimes they say something that stings. I'm sure that any clinician has had that before where you realize, oh, I didn't even think about it from that perspective. Thanks for educating me. And now maybe like the research you've done, we can find some of these areas in the patient experience that actually could improve our clinical practice, right? I'm certain the example you gave before with the interventional radiologists helping to prevent longer hospitalizations, most people want to be at home, right? So if you can learn some things from patient feedback, even just in these comments, certainly that could improve some of our clinical decision-making as well as the outcomes for the patients. And certainly the financial aspect of medicine is one that's, you know, maybe spiraling out of control. And if we can use these algorithms to help us better strategize and utilize resources, that would be a great thing for all of us.
Another great example, Ian, is the COVID-19 sure. pandemic. And we mm-hmm. have all faced the supply chain constraints. So think about the AI tools and their applications in supply chain so that we could connect the dots between the distributors and the suppliers and where the need is to efficiently get to the products, the drugs, the equipment that we need at a lower cost. So all these are great applications. And I think about from the point of view of patient and in your own space as a family practitioner, these days you get a lot of messages directly to your cell phone from the patients. But how can you get those classified in the same way that is being classified in Gmail or other mails that we use, so that those that are of higher importance do come to you right away, whereas the ones that you could have time and opportunity to answer in a little bit more time, you could defer them so that you can prioritize the response. Are there things that require your immediate attention? Are there things that can be answered by somebody else so that it's not just a burden on you, but maybe some other member on your team could answer those? So these applications that we are seeing in real life need to come into healthcare to make us better and efficient clinicians.
Yeah, I love that example and I'm right on board with you. So if you know anybody that's working on that solution, I would love to talk to them and give them some moral support to get that accomplished. Because you're right, you know, there's a lot of, one of the main motivations for me is that we have all this really amazing technology that we're using on a day-to-day basis that, you know, is still just seeping its way into the clinical practice of medicine, or even really the rest of the healthcare system. The medical industrial complex has been somewhat slow to adopt some of these amazing technologies. One of the other things that you mentioned to me while we were trying to coordinate having this engaging discussion is some of the challenges to AI implementation is something that you brought up. So I'm wondering where your mind goes with how do we overcome some of these barriers for clinicians like yourself and myself to use some of these emerging technologies? What are those barriers?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. That's a very big question for us to answer.
Sure.
What we have realized over the last few years is that there is a great opportunity for us to apply in healthcare. And that's where a lot of research work has been focused. But what's great to see is that we are starting to take steps towards the next phase in its evolution that, yes, we have researched this. Maybe we have developed some tools that can be applied in healthcare. But how do we know which ones are the right ones, which ones are cost effective, which ones will truly make a difference? Just like any drug or device that we evaluate for application in clinical space, do we have the metrics? Do we have the evaluation methods to evaluate these tools before they hit the clinical space? Or once they hit the clinical space and they are in production, can we still continue to assess them for their performance? And that's just a natural evolution as we grow from trying to understand what are these tools to how are they meaningfully impacting our patients and which ones are right, which ones are not right for either application or for a group of patients or clinical situations and the clinical context. So there is a lot of research work that is going on in this space. And again, it's a huge, big space to work in because it includes all levels of application of sciences. We have to consider things like bias, and bias could be in the data set itself. It could be in the model. It could be in application. So it's at all different levels. We have to think about generalizability and scalability of these solutions. So maybe for one purpose, a solution works well, but it doesn't work well for other clinical contexts. So we have to be cautious about it. We wouldn't prescribe the same medication for five different diseases, right? So we can't apply the same AI solution to a lot of different contexts, disease contexts either. So we are learning, or we are just starting to learn about these evaluation methods and these implementation challenges. There was a recent paper that I was fortunate to be part of. It's called the T-HI, which was published in BMJ Informatics Journal, which talked about an evaluation method, how to evaluate these algorithms. And there is further research that is coming soon, which is also focused on evaluation of these AI algorithms, especially early AI algorithms in clinical space. And that is an important step for us to take. There is another big aspect of application of AI in healthcare, which is related to human-computer interface. So you could develop the best algorithm in the world, but if humans are not going to accept it, accept its guidance, or if it is too clumsy, then we know that it may not deliver what we want it to deliver. So those aspects are also being studied right now. The patient adoption aspect is also being studied now, where we are trying to understand the acceptance of AI-guided results or AI-guided decisions, not just amongst clinicians, but also for the patients. They need to be educated about it too, because they're equal partners, if not more, in decision-making about the guidance that is being delivered through these AI algorithms. So are the patients going to accept this, or are they going to decline that, and they just want your clinician to give you the advice with or without it? So we are learning a whole lot of these aspects as we mature in this space and go from just bench-based research, or I should probably say cloud-based research, or your server-based research to application at bedside.
Yeah, and again, for the listening audience, I think you'll echo my compliments to your willingness to share your insight and thoughts. I'm really interested in the patient perceptions of technology in the clinical encounter. For those that have listened to episodes before, I've talked about that. And that's what I've been working on with my students, is how accepting are patients going to be of the technology? Because it's not like flipping a switch. This whole process, as you can attest to, and I can attest to, takes a lot of time and effort. You have to build a community. You have to share ideas. But at the end of the day, it's not about us just as clinicians. It's that the people that we're caring for say, this is okay for you to use during my care. And I have found, and hopefully maybe this is something that could be contributed to the community soon enough as we're working on it, that a lot of people are accepting of technology as long as they are familiar with the clinician or trust the clinician that's involved in their care. So we can't, as you said, exclude them from the equation. They're a very important part of the equation. And, you know, many of us either have been patients already or will be patients in the future, so we can understand that. Now, Dr. Mathur, we're starting to wind down here on episode 81 of the Man and Machine podcast. So many great points made by yourself. I'm wondering what other thoughts you can leave the listening audience with here about BrainX community or other work that you're doing and seeing that they can take a look at and that can really excite them to get involved in this community.
Well, first of all, I want to congratulate you for getting to episode number 81 in such a short period of time. That's a lot of work. And yes. And I'm sure the audience appreciate all the content that they're getting through you. And just the whole spectrum of content with different speakers who can provide different aspects and their experience. So first of all, congratulations on that. I think going back to the patient question and the comment and their adoption, patients will follow the clinician's advice, and for most part, they want to be equal participants in their care, if not more. Mm-hmm. But in that, the central premise is that the clinicians understand well the drugs or the devices or the tools that they're using. And that's what we are focused on, educating the clinicians. Because if they understand the application of AI well, then they will be able to communicate it better, explain it better to the patients. They will be able to use it judiciously. They will be able to use it in a cost-effective manner. And that's where the hope is, that these tools and technologies are used in the appropriate manner to benefit our patients. So our journey in BrainX community is to educate clinicians, data scientists, engineers, or for mm-hmm. that matter, anybody who's interested in AI application of healthcare, administrators, the CEOs, CIOs, anybody for that matter, in trying to connect with each other, in trying to understand the needs, in looking at the research work, looking at the scientific work that is there, and then learning from that, and then contributing to this community themselves by sharing the knowledge that they have or they have learned from other spaces. So it's about learning, it's about contributing, and it's about a shared platform for everyone. And we are trying to deliver that in all different content mediums, whether it's through YouTube, whether it's through website, whether it's through, because people like different mediums, content medium, and that's what we are trying to utilize.
And I believe that is what you're doing. And that's why I'm thankful that you took the time to join us on episode 81 of the Man and Machine podcast. That's why I'm thankful that we were introduced through Innovator MD. It's why I'm thankful that individuals like yourself and your colleagues at BrainX are really leading this movement to educate ourselves, to look at what's happening, to inspire each other. I was inspired by some of the ideas that were shared on that YouTube video, which is why which was the recap of your 2021 evaluation. And that's why I shared it with students I'm working with. So I shared it with some other colleagues who are not clinicians, but are interested in the data science and AI space and said, hey, you should watch this or listen to this because it'll tell you the mindset that many people are coming to these problems with. How do we marry technology with better clinical outcomes, better experiences for patients, and I think also improving ourselves as physicians and other clinicians. This technology can help us be better. So for the listening audience, we have now finished up episode 81 with Dr. Piyush Mathur from the Cleveland Clinic and BrainX AI community. If this is your first episode, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you've learned something and been inspired. well, not expired, but inspired, actually. There is inspiration and expiration when breathing, and we should be inspired by the discussion today. If you've joined in every so often, I would encourage you to go back and listen to some of our other recent episodes talking about AI and medicine and technology and science. But if this is your 81st episode of the Man and Machine Podcast, if you've been with us since the very beginning, thank you for coming back again. Please share this information with friends, colleagues, anyone who might be interested in science and technology and artificial intelligence. And we would like for you to remember that the imagined fuels reality.